Good evening, everyone. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Welcome, everyone. May I have a motion to approve the minutes of the regular business meeting of March 8, 2021, and work study meeting of March 22, 2021? First, this is Jerr, seconded by Mrs. Penney. All in favor? Passes 7-0. May I have a motion to approve the treasurer's and business office financial reports and extracurricular fund report for February 2021? Mrs. Donaldson, seconded by Mrs. Alessi. All in favor? Passes 7-0. Superintendent's report.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us this evening. We have a lot of news to report tonight. We are also presenting our budget adoption presentation. I do want to bring attention to the board that you do have the new updated budget as of this evening, which is different than what you received last week. So you should have a copy of that on your table. To begin, we welcome back grades 7, 8, and 12 back on March 22nd. These are the students who opted for a full-day in-person instruction will return. Overall, it was a fairly smooth entrance back to in-person full-day instruction, and it was truly wonderful seeing all of the students in the building again, reconnecting with their friends and school classes. We're very, very excited to launch the return to full-day in-person instruction this coming Monday, April 19th, to grades 9, 10, and 11. I will have a letter going out this week to those families with pertinent reminders as to that launch date. I also want to report that last week we were able to have a number of students participate with the central office and administrative team in the joint Eastern Suffolk, Nassau, Western Suffolk, BOCES, Long Island Regional Virtual Student Forum. The forum was a terrific opportunity for students to share their feedback after this year of COVID. And I will tell you, they were absolutely wonderful giving feedback as to, you know, their feelings, their needs, their wants, and just basically, you know, good and bad feedback regarding this year of being, you know, at home on instruction, returning to the person. So there were a number of guiding questions that we asked the students. And yeah, I would say many, many districts from Long Island participated, but not all, but the kids were just terrific. So I want to thank Matthew Minicozzi, Michael Minio, and Thomas Orifici, who represented Babylon. They did a terrific job, and the breakout groups were really, really very powerful. And now we're taking that feedback ourselves to, you know, use and continue to use as students return and even as we plan for September. Okay? I also want to congratulate our high school student artists, our great middle school and high school student artists. They had their work virtually displayed as part of the New York State Legislative Art Show through the New York State Art Teachers Association. Special thanks to our two art teachers who got the students involved in that virtual art fair and art show. I also want to alert the board that Syntax, our PR firm, is continuing to make final touches to the new website design. I would like to have that review of that design at the April 26th meeting, the work study meeting, where you'll get a chance to see the design, the layout of certain, you know, buttons. And do know that we took that design based on feedback of, you know, some various new designs out there in school districts. I am very pleased with seeing, I'm on the, you know, phone with them almost every other day, making little changes here and there, but we're ready to have you see it, and we're excited about that. That will be a live launch set for July. Okay. Mr. D'Amico, do you want to review a little bit about the grades 3 through 8, New York State assessments, the regents, and the AP exams?
Sure. Thank you. Let me start by esteemed trustees who are teachers, this will be review material for them. But for our audience and our other trustees, I'm going to start with 3A assessment. I'm going to give you some of what's most important to know. So with the 3A assessment, we're only administering session one. We expect at the most that would take 90 minutes, possibly even less than that. And we're going to plan for 2 hours. The testing window for ELA is April 19th to the 29th, math May 3rd to the 14th, and science in grades 4 and 8, we're only administering the written piece, or I should say the state is only requiring district to administer the written piece, and that's June 7th through 11th. Districts are able to take the whole window for any portion of the administration. We sent out a survey to all of our parents. We're waiting on more results there before we make a decision on the model that we will adopt for the administration of the 3A assessment. And in talking with my colleagues, other assistant superintendents, many districts are adopting the model of just having the assessment in the class, which typically we have not done. We've tried to separate students who are taking the test from students who are not taking the test. Because we still want to maintain a level of safety, we don't want to mix cohorts of students, and because it's only the first session that's being administered in one day, in one session, that's a model that we may as well adopt. The principals have sent, I sent out a school messenger with the link to the survey. The principals are sending out a reminder. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to send out the school messenger again. We're really asking parents to be diligent and to complete the survey. Some parents have sent in letters. We are going to ask that they complete the survey. That will be the easiest way for us to determine who will be taking the assessment and who will. We're also waiting on the accountability waiver decision from the state, as well as the APPR. Just to go back, the state had put out 2 waivers which were denied by the Federal Education Department. There's now a waiver out about accountability, and it's hard to imagine how the state will measure accountability with the assessment. I think we're going to find across the state that refusal rates are going to go up. So I expect that waiver will be accepted, but we don't know. We're waiting on it. Remote students are not required to come to school to take the assessment, but they may choose to come in to sit in the assessment. That's 3A. Let's talk a little bit about Regents. We're going to be sending home the Regents exams. Are much more complicated. We're going to be sending home communications related to the administration of the exams once we assert that all decisions have been made at the state and federal levels. I expect that we'll be communicating within the next 2 weeks, and we're going to schedule a Zoom meeting for parents and students. We just feel like it's important to give people the opportunity to ask questions. Here's some information about that. So it's limited to 4 regents. The English regents will be administered on June 17th, Living Environment on June 22nd, Algebra 1 on June 23rd, Earth Science on June 24th. Those are the only regents that are being administered. The state is really meeting the minimum requirements as set forth by the Department of Education. As I said, both of their waivers were denied. So really, this is just an exercise in meeting the minimum requirements as set forth by the department. Students can qualify for an exemption to the Regents exams in the following manner. If they are currently enrolled in a course of study that would ordinarily culminate in the taking of a January Regents and a January or June Regents and earn credit for such course of study by the end of the first semester of the June 2021 school year. Seventh and eighth graders are also exempt from this. We do not offer accelerated coursework to seventh graders who can take Regents, but our eighth graders can. Between September 21, 2020, and the end of the first semester of the 2021 school year, if a student has successfully completed a makeup program for the purpose of earning course credit, they could be exempt. Again, virtual students will not be required to come in for those assessments. Students granted an exemption from any examination are not required to pass such specific Regents examinations to meet the assessment requirements for any diploma type. So if a student takes an exemption, they may still earn a local, a Regents diploma with advanced designation. This part is important, and we had gotten it earlier on a different interpretation of this. So in the event that a student chooses an exemption, an E will appear on the transcripts of those students who choose that exemption. Now, a little bit about scores, GAP score, because this was a great concern. Schools and districts must record the score of any Regents exam on a student's permanent record. But remember, the permanent record is a local document. The choice to record a score or an E for an exempt on a student's transcript will be made in consultation with the student. So here's what that means. Before that, we originally thought that if a student takes the Regents, that score has to appear on their transcript. And with that being the case, there was really no way to convince or to make the rationale that a student should take the Regents. With this guidance, again, the student takes the Regents, it's really their choice if that score appears on their transcript. I think the rationale then for taking the Regents is that they're going to be taking them moving forward. This isn't going to be the case next year or moving forward. So really, it's probably good practice for a student who may have to take Regents later on. It might be good practice for them to take it this year as well, especially since they can then choose whether that score is going to appear on their transcripts. I kind of equated it to if a runner had a race and the race was canceled, you wouldn't tell them to stop training. They should continue training for their next race. That might be the rationale for a student to take the Regents under these conditions.
I mean, can I just ask one question? Because it's exactly what you were saying. So, like in the race, they can still win the race. I mean, if they decide to take it, correct? And they do well, maybe the cut score, which I can only imagine is going to be lower than it's ever been before.
That's
if they do take it, it's no harm.
That's right.
But if they do better, it could help them. Right?
Yes. So, just to skip around a little bit, all of our policies in regards to this, and the state has adopted this too, are really no harm policies. So to your point, if they want to take that Regents and they feel that they're going to do well on it, or even if they're not so sure, if they get a good score on that Regents, moving forward, that score will appear on their transcript if they choose to have it appear there. There's no way to predict what the college application process is going to look like moving forward related to this year. But that's another great rationale. If I'm gonna hit it out of the park and I think I'm gonna do well, it might be nice to have that score on my transcript because I'm applying for college down the road. Our policies, as we move forward, and I've met with the directors, I've met with Mr. Cerrone, and we're continuing to meet. We're in the final stages of making decisions about what our assessments will be. We're all in agreement that there should probably be a final exam, that both for what we were talking about before. Symbolically, we end our courses, there's a final exam. We need the practice of assessment. We're returning to normalcy where exams, final exams are a part of what we do. But we in no way want those final exams to hurt a student because there's just been too much variety of what our students have had to deal with throughout the year. So all of our policies related to our assessments moving forward there'll be no harm policy. And that's in fact what the state's done. So they're giving the student the choice to either take an E or put the score on their transcript. I think that's another great rationale for perhaps taking the region.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
On the same vein, so I appreciate the do no harm for our students, but my question is if we don't get an accountability waiver and we encourage these students to take the exam because it's not going to hurt them, and potentially some kids don't do well, will that hurt the district in terms of accountability with the state and the feds?
I'm not sure. I don't know the answer to that yet. There's no way for us to know that yet. I just can't imagine how they're going to be able to use what we have towards the time. The other piece is that I'll be developing a survey for the regions similar to what we did for 3A. So we will be sending something home to parents asking whether they will be seeking an exemption for the Regents exam. What we're really going to want to stress in that survey is that that's about this year and the pandemic. We really want to be careful that we don't send the message that moving forward, we expect Regents test refusals to become something of the general class. So that's going to be something they're going to want to stress in. I think that's it. I think I covered everything on Regents. AP exams. As in years past, Mr. Murphy is our district AP coordinator. He does a great job managing and facilitating all elements of the AP program, including the exams. He has a school messenger communication going out tomorrow. But in general, all of our exams will be administered during administration one of the AP exam schedule, which is a paper-only administration held between May 3rd and 7th, the 10th and the 12th, the 14th and the 17th. If you recall last year, we did have students who struggled with, as all students were, the computer-based administration of the AP exams. We decided as a district, we don't want to deal with that. We're doing it all during administration one. We again have NUSA St. Joe's across the street, and that's where all of the assessments will be administered. We offer 13 AP courses, so of course 13 exams. That includes the AP Studio Work course, which consists of a portfolio submission. I mentioned that they're all going to be across the street. All AP teachers will be offering 9 hours of review for all AP classes. I'll be developing a calendar of offerings as I've done in the past, and I'll be posting that to the district website. But I do want to stress that the teachers, all of the AP teachers, communicate with their students about those review sessions. And some of them are held within the classes. Some AP numbers. This year we have 203 AP students. We have 380 enrollments, right? So we have 203 students enrolled, and there's 380 enrollments across those 13 AP offerings. We have 325 AP exams. So the most we could have is 380. That's how many enrollments we have. We have 325 AP exams, 55 not testing. That doesn't mean 55 students not testing. That means 55 AP exams not being taken. I think those are really big numbers. Remember, we kind of took a break from the work we did towards, if you're in an AP class, you take the AP exam. We had great success with that in this year and a half of the pandemic. Remember last year, we have not stressed that. So the fact that there's only 55 non-test for the AP, I think it's great. I think that's a good reflection on the work we've done through the years. That's it. Any questions or yes?
I think Parents used this last time, I apologize. But I understand definitely what's gone on the last 2 years, but I'm assuming moving forward, we're going to, you know, all going well, that we'll get back on track. And
absolutely.
Because, I mean, I think that contributes to the content of the classroom and the caliber of the instruction that we must make sure. Thank you.
Thank you to the people that was outstanding. Thank you for that, Maria. Okay, we are going to pull up the budget presentation tonight. We are adopting the budget tonight, and we have our last adoption presentation. We'll take a couple of minutes to get pulled up on the screen. This copy of the budget presentation will also be online as of tomorrow morning. You could also find online the line item budget that we will be adopting tonight. Okay. Perfect. Thank you. Okay, so this is our budget adoption. As always, we are trying to maintain, enhance, and restore the educational programs here in Babylon. That is our underlying goal each and every year. And as we know, a strong school district equates to strong home values. So I think the upcoming budget that everybody will be voting on in May, hopefully tonight, we'll be getting some more minute details as to what it actually entails. I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Daly.
Okay, good evening. Let's begin. I always include this slide, which gives you some of the broader principles of budgeting. What's important to keep in mind here is the first two bullet points, the proposed budget and the tax levy, are two items that are totally within the control of the Board of Education. The last two bullet points, the assessed valuation and tax rate, are under the control of the town of Babylon. What's often confused is the tax levy and the tax rate. The tax levy is the total dollar amount that our school needs to raise in property taxes. That's what we need to balance all sides of our budget scale. The tax rate is a mathematical factor that is determined by dividing the tax levy by the total assessed valuation. That's the total value of all real property in the Babylon School District. That gives you a rate. That rate is applied to the individual property owner's assessed value, and that's the amount of school taxes that that individual would pay. So I'm not going to read through that. You can at your leisure. So this is something that has made a big splash in the paper last week. As many of you have read, the legislature adopted the state budget, and it was a windfall of money that was devoted for education statewide. Now, there was also a boatload of money that was targeted for school districts from the federal government. So first of all, in analyzing the state aid for Babylon, we have to make a distinction about the two. State aid is from Albany, federal from Washington. The federal money is specifically for pandemic relief expenditures dating back to the start of the pandemic. They are a one-shot. They're treated like a federal grant. Once they're done, they're done. They're not going to come back. You have a four-year drawdown period on that, and like any other federal grant, you have to submit an FS-10, a grant application. You have to show that the expenditures had been made, and then you get reimbursed for those expenditures. So the state part is something that we get every year, and typically it builds on the prior year. So the good news is that the foundation aid, which is by and large the lion's share of state aid, was increased to Long Island Schools, 13%. I can't quite see because I got this tile here, but The increase in foundation aid for Babylon was 2.54%. So you need to keep those two numbers in mind. 13% for all of Long Island, 2.54% for Babylon. The new foundation aid that was driven to school districts was based on poverty, based on ENL population, and some other factors. There were, I wrote it down here, approximately 16 school districts in Suffolk County that only received the default minimum of 2%. So when you're hearing about the total pool of money, total pool of foundation aid did increase 13%, but not for everyone. It was only those that in the eyes of Albany were the most needy. It is what it is, and I don't want to give the impression that I'm not appreciative, and nor should any of you, of a 2.54% increase, but it's not 13%. It was $140,000 approximately. Continuing down with the aid, with the breakdown on the screen, you can go down and see our total. Anything below foundation aid is referred to as expense-driven aid. You have to make the expense to get the aid back. It's estimated. They're estimating that our BOCES aid next year is going to be almost $1.3 million. You will have to make a level of expenditures that's going to generate $1.3 million. That's why when you look at the expense aid, you always have to approach these increases with a little hesitation, because if they're higher, you'll get more aid. If they're low, you'll get less aid. One of the things that I also have to point out, many of the Long Island school districts this year, it was mentioned in the articles, received universal pre-K aid. If you look at my chart, that's wonderful if we had a universal pre-K program, but we don't. So basically they included it in our aid run if we had a program or at any point decided to run a program. So a lot of school districts, again, you'll see on the bottom where I had to adjust that out because there's no possibility of us getting that aid. So it would be foolish to even include that in any of our projections when we're trying to balance the scale. So for those purposes, we use this number here, which is a total increase of 3.6. Now, down on the bottom, this is the really exciting news. This is the federal money. We're scheduled to receive almost $2 million. And we have 4 years to draw that money down. But that money cannot be booked as a general fund revenue. You can't use that money to reduce the tax levy and just put it in, because once it's done, it's gone. You can't book it. It's in the special aid fund. When you spend it, you submit the FS-10F copy that you made the expenditures, they will reimburse us. So, but that is good news. It's certainly exciting news.
Yeah. So what would we be using that money for? Something we've already...
Things we've already done. PPE.
Okay.
Sneeze guards, guidance counselors, social emotional learning, COVID teachers, the virtual teacher that we had to hire too.
Right.
All of those past, present, and future expenditures related to dealing with and providing either catch-up or for services related to the pandemic are expenses that we get reimbursed for.
So those teachers that we hired.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We will not have a problem hitting $1.9 million, and that money will come back to us. And certainly that money will be considered a revenue that will help us down the road, because you have to remember, we spent anywhere from $500,000 to $700,000 to educate students to the extent that we did this year. Yes.
Would it also include all the reconfigurations that
absolutely
we had to do?
Okay. Yeah, they're giving you wide latitude, you know, in that, but some of the guidance is still forthcoming because it just happened. You know, I think we're kind of fortunate, you know, again, we only receive of our total revenue 17% state aid and federal money. So there's other places where this has been a much bigger factor, where they may have gotten 13% foundation aid. They may be going back and either adding things on their budget or taking things out, depending on the revenue side of things. So this is just a summary, and I actually put the quote up there from Newsday for Long Island schools that will mean an overall 13%, 27 million increase in foundation aid and primary funding stream for districts. And as I said, for us, that was only 2.54. Now the pandemic relief, that definitely is significant. It comes in basically two flavors, but the rules apply the same to both. They're a one-time funding source, and you have 4 years to draw that down. So this is our usual slide this time of year. It's a 2020-2021-21-22 current revenue and tax rate schedule based on the budget that you're going to adopt tonight and the tax levy calculation that we've already completed and have factored into both sides of our budget. So state aid, we're estimating an increase of 248. Other income is remaining unchanged. So we come down, we have our appropriated fund balance of 1.2. We're gonna do the same level as last year. Same level of monies from reserves, 200,000. Property taxes, 1.28%. Our tax levy increase year to year, 1.28%. For a total of $563,250. Budget to budget increase, $811,937. As a percentage, that's 1.46%. Coming down to what is oftentimes very important to a lot of people in the community, what does this mean on an average home in Babylon? What that means is an annual difference in total taxes of $127.67 or $10.64 a month. Yes.
Since you won't be here next year for me to ask you this question, I'll ask it now. So when we get, say, $500,000 drawn down at federal funds, will that appear in the other income line for the 2022-23 school year budget? Is that where we're going to see it?
Yes.
Coming back?
Yep.
And then how we... You don't quite care now because you're not going to be here, but how are we going, like, how do we balance that out now? Because now we'll have a lot more income than we're used to getting in year one.
Before I leave, I can promise to give you a lot of places I think you should use that. Okay. Like, I would probably say it's time to look at some of the reserves.
Yeah, so that's
that we've been spending down.
Those reserves that we've been...
And, you know, there's different ways to get it back into benefit students. At the end of the day, you know, you have expenses to make. With some of the things we've had to do, we've been drawing down on monies that we've been fortunate enough in the pre-COVID years to accumulate. But then we start to draw it down. And, you know, you kind of take it when you get it. And when it's not, there's nothing to take, you got to sort of tighten up the belt and make difficult decisions. But clearly, we've paid a lot of money for things we never anticipated paying for. We caught some breaks last year. We didn't have a spring season sports. This year we've had them all. And we, excuse me?
That was not a break.
Well, I don't mean a break. That's terrible of me to say that. A financial break. Certainly not a break from the student standpoint or the parents. But so yeah, you know, you take it when you get it, and you got to be always look multiple years, not just 1 year.
So you will leave us some plans and some ideas before you go.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. So again, big picture, budget tonight, $56,414,443. Dollar increase, $811,937, a 1.46 budget to budget increase. Tax levy, the monies that we're going to raise in taxes, the increase, as a percentage, 1.28%. That's barely above the annual change in the CPI, which was 1.23. Total dollars, $563,250. Last year, tax levy per the formula was 2.82%. Here's the actual calculation. I'm not going to bore you and go through it. It will be up on the website. But again, this is what is provided by the state. All school districts are required to follow this. You come down, start with current year, bring it down, and then you add current year exclusions. We arrive at the percent increase is 1.28%. This has already been submitted up to Albany. All school districts are required to submit this to Albany by March 1st. So this is the slide. Of course, you've seen it now, where it's hard to believe it's year 10. And this shows how Babylon has fared with both its budget increases and its tax levy increases compared to Suffolk and compared to all of Long Island. I was just able today to calculate, because everybody's a little bit behind because of the recent budget adoption. So we don't have budget numbers yet because people are still, I'm sure, fine-tuning. But I was able to calculate out the tax levy percent increases for Long Island and Suffolk County. And looking, just looking at our 10-year average budget increase is 1.95%. in the tax cap era, below 2%. Our tax levy increase in that same period, the average was 2.34% versus 2.04, 2.21. Now, what you do have to take into account here is you do know we had a major bond referendum, and the debt service that results from that is an exclusion to the cap. So that's what enabled us to go up in these years because of the new debt we were introducing from the project renewal. Pie chart showing the revenue distribution. You heard me say before, we received 17% total revenues in state aid, 3% fund balance, $500,000 other income, and then our tax levy is almost 80%, $44,472,506. On the expenditure side, again, this really doesn't change year to year. And it probably, if I put up any other school district right now, it would probably look very similar because of the nature of our business, which is education. And that education is driven by people and salaries, both instructional and support staff. So we're looking at a little, almost 70% here, total expenditures and salaries and fringe benefits. This is a broad brush look at the current 2021 budget and the proposed increases in those same categories in the draft budget or the budget we'll be adopting tonight. I kind of can't see here, but again, you know, the big increases are naturally where you would expect them to be. And where they should be, and the big dollars are in and where you would expect them to be, which is the teaching code, the employee benefit code, which corresponds with the slide, the pie chart that I just shared with you. Again, total increase, budget to budget, 1.46.
Great, thank you, Dr. Daly. Regarding appropriations, every year we appropriate or we designate monies to help offset the budget. And this year we will be appropriating $1.4 million in appropriations. Now, I do want to mention a few years back, that number was 1.6. So we've been, you know, this is, I think, the second year in a row or maybe the third year in a row we've brought that number down. And basically what that says, that basically, you know, alerts the community that we're not so reliant on the use of fund balance. And by bringing that number down, it has enabled the district to maintain and even improve its strong fiscal health over the last couple of years. And you've read about that with our improved credit rating, you know, the Comptroller's Office designations, the Moody's designation. So that is moving in a positive direction. We would continue to love to bring that down in future years as well, okay? So let's talk a little bit about the proposed highlights. Obviously, you know, the budget maintains so many of the aspects of our school district that we
celebrate our sound low class sizes, our low student to teacher ratios at all levels, a full day comprehensive kindergarten program, our commitment to the sciences, such as our scientific research course, our STEAM courses, our Project Lead the Way pathways, our advanced placement offerings and our offerings that we promote, you know, through approved university courses that we hold here at Babylon High School. And I will tell you, we have a number of students who graduate from here with quite a number of graduate credits, you know, university credits going into their freshman year. And we have a number of students entering freshman year that could be going in as a, you know, second semester freshman or even sophomore status. It's really wonderful to see that happen. And we thank everybody, all of our directors who do all that great work to make sure that we're able to continue offering those courses. It also maintains our special education program, a very robust, comprehensive suite of services for students who receive special education support services. It allows us to continue the level of support for response to intervention and AIS. Obviously, our music and art programs, something that we take very seriously here. We are actually running an in-person summer music program this year again. Like I said, we are opening up, and it's great news, but we do value the arts and music. So we're happy that this budget that we're proposing continues to maintain and bring back things that students excel in, as well as interscholastic athletic teams, K through two clubs, and extracurricular activities. Some of the enhancements, a number of years back, we committed to bringing in a one-to-one world computing initiative. I believe we are going into now the fifth year of that. And with that, you know, commitment comes the need to replenish. So next year's budget has those monies in for the cyclical replenishment of devices, as well as infrastructure needs, upgrades district-wide to software, addressing privacy issues. There's a lot going on in the area of technology. I feel like this year really pushed us into a jumpstart mode. So I think we're in very, very good shape as we approach September. The budget also reflects our commitment to social emotional health with the added full-time equivalent of making a part-time counselor at the grade school to full-time status where we need her. Other enhancements include funding to vet, purchase, and professionally train our teachers in K-6 on a new mathematics curriculum that will be technologically heavy as well. So parents and students, when they're at home, can plug in with the technological tools that that program comes along with. And the budget also promotes instructional materials and supplies necessary for all content areas and grade levels. Looking at restoration, we have a number of retirees as of this June. We will be replacing all retired positions with newcomers. That includes two central office positions, an elementary teacher, a physical education teacher, a biology teacher, and two speech and language teachers. In addition, the budget also contains the funding for the restoration of a full-time assistant principal at Babylon Junior Senior High School. Okay. Just some important dates to remind and put on your calendar. Monday, May 10th at 7:30 p.m., we will have our annual budget hearing here in the library and on Zoom. And on Tuesday, May 18th, from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m., we will have the annual budget vote here in the East Gymnasium. That will be an in-person vote, not like last year, an in-person vote all day long. That is it. So we want to thank you for listening to this and take some of the board's questions if there are any other questions.
Okay.
I have a question. I know there was a lot of discussion in the community about the UPK money, the universal pre-K money. So I feel like I know the answer to this question, but just to put it out there, could you explain why we don't do UPK in Babylon and if it's typical of districts our size to offer a program like that?
We actually looked into it a few years ago. To run the program would probably cost four times what they're giving us. Yeah. And there were certain times when you had to apply for it, and that's when we called. I think it was around 3 or 4 years ago. But the money that, you know, they designate, and this is why a lot of school districts don't have UPK, because it does not guarantee a spot for every child either. You have to do lotteries. You know, we had it in my prior district. But for the amount of money that they're giving a school district to run the program with all the personnel that you need and the materials and you know, instructional supplies, the spacing, the benefits, you could not, you need a crew, you need a little faculty to run it. And for the amount of money that they give you, you're looking maybe at four or five times the amount to run a real program. We also have our in-house program here, which is our 3 and 4 year old program, which is starting up again in, you know, September, late September, we'll start that. And that has been a highlight program here that we run actually very efficiently, financially, I'm saying efficiently. And it's a very popular program here at Babylon. And it's also a program that connects the students in the building who might want to take up education as a career in helping out in that program. UPK programs sometimes have very strict restrictions that would not allow us to have students in-house helping out. And that just gives you a little bit of a rundown of how, you know, UPK works. You also have to open up UPK to other providers, give a portion of those monies sometimes to outside local providers in the community. It's like any other grant. You have to give a portion of the grant outside of the district. Okay?
Okay, just a question on the report card. I just wanted to take a look at it's page 3. So I just saw on the EBLR, so we're using, so this is on the third page of the report card, I guess $100,000 from the employee benefit accrued liability. So just now that you're seeing the balance of 199,978, is that after the $100,000 or once we use that now we're back down to the 99,978?
That's a great question. If you're looking at the report card, I believe the current year is 99,000, and I'm anticipating 199,000 or something like that. Yes.
Yes, that is it. Yes, so, but it says to use that, yeah. So just why that's where my confusion.
Yeah. So what I'm anticipating? You will remember last year when we closed out the books, and there was talk about a 20% reduction in state aid, and we finished up above the 4%. We decided that we were going to increase on the books the appropriated fund balance in the event that we did lose 20% state aid. So we expect to finish up this year with money that we appropriated last year that it turned out we didn't have to use because we did get all of our state aid. But at the time last year, you remember when the governor said, we're withholding 20%, we don't even know if that's going to be enough. And there was a lot of jockeying going on between the state and Washington with regard to aid. If we don't get aid from Washington, we're not going to be able to give it to the schools. So a lot of school districts are trying to position themselves. So when we finish this year's audit, it's anticipated that we're going to be able to take something above the 4% that we're allowed to carry and divert it to reserves that need it, EBLR being one. That's the hope. Okay. And remember, it's an estimated amount.
Right. Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
So Dr. Daly, you may not have the information yet, but for the government federal grant money, we'll be getting those 4-year drawdown periods. Does BOCES provide any support for that in terms of helping with the paperwork, or is that something that falls entirely in the business office?
It's all business office. I don't, I don't anticipate that being a major undertaking. You know, a lot of people in our position even feel, why are they even making us go through that exercise? And I could answer it, be a little bit cynical and say, because they're hoping that some people won't do it and they won't get all their money. But it's really there for the taking, and I don't anticipate it being that complicated a process.
Can I just ask one more question? So the state foundation aid, I know this is the 13%, but we got the 2.54, you know, based on E&L and poverty and the like. Was the federal monies that we received based on the same requirements? I mean, is that...
You know, I'm not 100% sure on that, but it seems to be relative. It's always tough to compare because two districts may have a similar combined wealth ratio, but they may have a different student demographic. So the aid that they might get via foundation aid might be very different than federal monies because of a higher percentage of perhaps E&L. So it's difficult. But one of the things that I did notice with the foundation aid, you know, I went through and I have the actual run here from the state, and you could just go through it very easily, see all the 2%. And if I gave you know, the names of some of the districts, you wouldn't be surprised. Cold Spring Harbor was the first, East Hampton, so you got Bayport Coupon, you got Sable, you got East Islip, which is kind of surprising because they probably have a lower combined wealth ratio than Babylon, but we did receive 2.54. So it goes on, it goes through. And it's the districts that you would think were the districts that only received 2%.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Moving on to committee reports. Audit committee.
Hello, everybody. So on tonight's agenda, I believe it's item number 10. You will see that the audit committee is asking to approve a modified audit report response plan. This is really just very simply an addition of some comments about the status of previous year's commentary from the state. So we're just going to approve that. It'll be up on the website. The comments pertain to the capital assets category and the food service program inventory. In addition, the New York State Comptroller's Office has been around doing gathering some information for their five-year audit plan, and we'll keep you up to date on anything that develops there. Thank you.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee has nothing to report at this point since our budget is already set to go.
Thank you. Buildings and Grounds?
Yes. We do have some reporting tonight. The HVAC in Row Hall was hoisted up on March 29th and installed, finally. All the plumbing and electrical was done so far. They're just troubleshooting now. They feel they should be done with the whole project, or it should be working by Wednesday. So there might be some residual stuff that they may be doing, but they think they'll have it running on Wednesday. That's it.
Hopefully we'll need cooler.
Technology. Hi. So the IT department is seeing an uptick in phishing attempts on all district email accounts, and that's something they're monitoring, and they will continue to update the staff as needed. Staff has started the data privacy and security modules. About 25% have completed them, and those must be completed according to the guidelines by April 30th. In order to do some security updates and do just a general inventory of district devices, IT will be looking to collect all student devices this summer. More information about that will be forthcoming.
Thank you. Curriculum?
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. Our next meeting is going to be Wednesday, May 5th. So we'll update you after that.
Great. That was Wednesday, May 5th, just in case that wasn't clear. And policy?
Okay, good evening. Our next meeting is scheduled for Monday, April 26th.
Thank you. We're going to pause for a moment. I'm going to turn it back to Mrs. Rossi.
Okay, so we have a resolution tonight accepting the resignation for purposes of retirement of Dr. Peter Daly. I think this came as a shock to all of us, but it is very, very well deserved. 6 years ago, I came here to Babylon and, you know, walked into a central office that was experienced, gifted in what they did. And I want to thank Dr. Daly for all his work that he's done for all the years here at Babylon. Dr. Daly has been here for many, many years in this role. He is someone that other people from other districts often call for advice. I will dearly miss you, but I know you won't be too far away. And I just want to congratulate you on a very, very well-deserved retirement. And thank you for all the dedicated years that you gave to this district, this Board of Education, to our central office team, and to the students, most importantly, of this district and our staff. Thank you so much, Pete. If anyone
thank
else
you.
Wants to
thank you.
Say some nice words to Dr. Daly.
We'll let Mrs.
Jers
go first.
Being the worst one, we'll just go first and get it over with. I want to thank you because I spent a lot of time with you with the Finance Committee, and I'll never look at a scale the same way again. I'm sure we have to retire those slides when the next person takes your place. But I appreciate all the efforts you've given. I anticipate you'll give us some guidance before you leave, because that's how we roll here. So I appreciate all you've done.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, my turn? Okay, thank you. So, Dr. Daly, it certainly has been an honor and a pleasure to have been working with you these past 9 years for me, because that's how long I've been around. You've been around a lot longer than that. Your expertise is second to none, and I've learned a lot. I'm not a math or a finance person, but I actually think I might be able to have a fairly intelligent conversation about it thanks to what I've learned from you. I admire your purposeful delivery and your patience, especially with this group, because we cut you off and never let you get a word in sometimes. But you are always so thorough when you explain anything budget-related, audit-related, bond-related, and I appreciate that. I admire your attention to detail and the professional tone that you have cultivated in and now has come to define the business office, because that is a top-notch organization. We're very, very lucky to have had you here, and I can't thank you enough for your service to our community, and I wish you many, many happy years and congratulations on a well-deserved retirement.
Thank you, Anne.
I'm not going anywhere.
All right, I think this is working. So, like Mrs. Jers, I will never look at the scale the same way. That's all, I mean, from, you know, before I was on the board for each meeting, but so I always say everything. But I do want to thank you, because every time we came to you with some new initiative that was unfunded, you know, after you kind of give them a look like, uh-oh, you always found a way to fund it and put the interest of the children ahead of everything else. And, you know, we really appreciate that. And we wish you a very long and healthy and happy retirement.
Thank you, Carol. That was sweet.
Dr. Daly, simply, I'd like to thank you for your guidance, your wisdom, your grace, your honesty. And after a number of years sitting almost side by side with your friendship, I wish you all the happiness and love that you can find in your future. And make sure you see a lot of concerts, especially at Jones Beach.
Thank you, Liz.
Okay, Dr. Daly, 6 years has been lovely working with you. When I was appointed as the audit chair as my first committee, I almost didn't make it. But your patience, I was like, how are they going to put me in charge of this? But your patience to understand what fund balances and the tax cap, bond debt, and levies, I mean, all in a few years, amazing. Thank you. I compare everyone that has your position on this island to you, and no one compares. So if my guy's watching me now from my district, I'm sorry, but no one compares. So thank you. Of your attention to detail, for your patience in explaining, for your thoroughness. And I wish you all the joy, travel, go everywhere, and enjoy life.
Thank you.
Without us.
Okay, so I'm going to jump in. So I just want to echo what
the ladies were saying about your patience and your grace and the time you take to really explain everything to us, because like Anne, I am not a math or business person, but I feel like when you explain the budget, I understand the budget. And I think particularly during this last year with the pandemic, I don't know how we could have gotten through the budgeting process and all of the things that were thrown at us without you. So I thank you for that. And I thank you for all of the time that you've dedicated to our community.
All right, try to follow up everyone. You never had the patience with me. Maybe I just wasn't getting it, but patience was not there. I was asked to leave his office plenty of times. With the buildings and grounds and with budget. But I do appreciate all what you've taught me over the years. And it's been 10 long years with you, and it's been a great time. I really appreciate what you've done here, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. Thanks, Ms. I appreciate it. Is that?
I think that's how we got off New Orleans. Wow. Gosh, you're quiet.
So, you know, it's this is my 22nd budget, and I have these books for the next guy, right in my closet, all the way back to 1999. And just before I came in here, I was tallying up just for the hell of it to see, you know, what my budget, how many budgets, what was the total dollar amount. And if you can believe it, I just missed $1 billion. It was 978,415,573. But when I add the two capital construction projects, I get over $1 billion. But, you know, I'm so appreciative of so much about the Babylon community, and I'm so appreciative of the wonderful people that I've worked with. I've worked with so many different board configurations, and what I leave feeling is that we are like any other team. You know, we have role players, you know, and we're on that team, and we're only as good as, you know, the weakest link on the team. And it's been an amazing run, and we all have a shelf life, and I'm kind of at mine. I'm going to get on and do some different things. I want to wish you all the best. You've been an amazing group. You all know I've had some personal challenges in the last year that just sort of sealed the deal for me, but I was kind of there already. And again, what a great leadership team. And I do have to say, this one and this one, Linda and Dan, we've been there, and you know, it's been a great run. Thank you. I wish all of you good luck.
Congratulations. I think what we might want to do now, rather than not waste people's time who are online with us, maybe we take right now questions on the budget only from those who are joining us via Zoom tonight. How does that sound? Fair enough? Okay.
So
budget only.
And then they can battle for the other one.
Yep. Then at the end of the meeting for other questions. Yep.
Please use the raise hand feature if you have any questions on the budget only. Ms. Campagna.
Good evening, everybody. You knew I was going to ask a budget question. Dr. Daly, I would like to congratulate you on your retirement. I am sure that you will be sorely missed by everybody in that room. I know that I only interact with you on these questions, so, and your presentations have always explained many things. I would appreciate it if you could further explain the four-year drawdown and the $1.9 million and how current year expenses, which I think you mentioned were about $500,000 to $700,000, how they will be able to fall into that $1.9 million.
So thank you for the kind words, Ms. Compagna. Current year expenses will be included, can be included in this filing. The details of the guidance as of last week were still forthcoming with regard to the actual mechanics of that, but certainly the intent here was to make districts or try to make districts whole for the expenses they incurred to have to bring students back and educate students both in person and virtually from the point that we were under an executive order to close and then reopen. So they will definitely come off that 1.9.
So then as far as where we got the money to pay for those expenses now.
We were in the same position that most every other district were under. We build a budget with anywhere from 3-4% contingent monies in it. Some of that money came from contingent funds. Others came from some of the different types of programs that we did not run as a result of COVID. So it was a combination of both that enabled us to be able to pay for the things that we had to provide children with an education during this difficult time.
So you moved line items around.
Absolutely. There was no other way to do it. We didn't move.
Okay.
We made voluntary transfers, which are allowable for partly for reasons like this, for reasons like special ed placements, for reasons like kindergarten registration. You know, we budget each year and we do our best to anticipate based on the current program, the current configuration, the current sections, the current special ed placements, the current athletics. And then, you know, we're doing that tonight for next year. And I'm sure, you know, being someone that has, you know, participated and taken part in this, there's no crystal ball.
Right.
That's the challenges to this job.
Okay. So then my only other question had to do with the actual voting itself. Ms. Rossi mentioned that it would be in person at the East Gymnasium. So does that mean that the absentee ballots will be only if requested by voters, or are we not doing absentee ballots? How is that being handled for this?
Yes, absentee ballots are being requested by voters this year.
And that request would go to the district clerk?
Correct, yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay, that's it. Thank you for the questions. Okay, we're going to get into the vote. Moving on to new business.
May I have a motion to omnibus items 1 through 15? First, Mrs. DeLorba, second to Mrs. Montalto. Any discussion? All in favor? Passes 7-0. May I have a motion to approve items 1 through 15? Mrs. Penney, seconded by Mrs. Donaldson. Any discussion? All in favor? Passes 7-0. Moving on to other business.
Okay, I just want to make a number of comments tonight. I just wanted to bring to everybody's attention, the board knows this, but some of the community might learn this tonight. Late Friday evening, the New York State Department of Health actually issued new interim guidance for in-person instruction in pre-K through grade 12 schools in New York State. That new guidance that came out pretty much aligns with the new CDC guidance that came out, you know, a few weeks prior. So what does that mean? Most pertinently, the new state guidance means that districts could go down to 3 feet, but there are parameters that the current language still has in place. And I just want to assure everybody
We are certainly well aware of the new guidance. The districts are currently waiting for legal interpretation of the guidance, but know that when we brought back grades 7, 8, and 12, I think it was really smooth. We have these students pretty much in classrooms at 6 feet. So what the new guidance says, it outlines, and I'm going to actually put the guidance up probably on the website tomorrow so everyone can see it. But we are in a county with still a high risk of transmission according to the color-coded system, right? So with that being said, the New York State Department of Health quotes, elementary schools can maintain physical distancing of at least 3 feet between students in classrooms, and cohorting is recommended. However, in middle and high schools, 3 feet between students in classrooms is recommended only when schools can use cohorting. That means keeping the same students together for much of the day. When schools cannot maintain cohorting, middle and high schools must maintain physical distancing of at least 6 feet between students in classrooms. So what does that mean for us? We are very hopeful that the county numbers will continue to drop, to drop, to drop, right? So we can not worry about, you know, other factors that we have to worry about. Right now, what the new guidance neglected to do, it neglected originally to talk about contact tracing. And something just came out today that talked about contact tracing. Contact tracing rules did not change. So if students are less than 6 feet together, they will be contact traced. So what are we doing about it? We brought back grades 7, 8, and 12 at 6 feet. And they're in classrooms with their teachers. It's our goal to do the same with 9, 10, and 11. If we are able to do that, and we are going to, as I said, you know, next Monday, the kids are coming in. If we're able to do that, we will have nothing to worry about. We won't have to worry about contact tracing ramifications. So we are really working very, very hard and being as optimistic as possible that grades 9, 10, and 11 will be able to come in while maintaining the 6 foot distance because we are in a high risk county of transmission still. Do I see that number going down? Absolutely. Do I see us opening in September back to normal? Absolutely. But if we can get all the kids in between, you know, Monday, we're going to be looking next week at how things are going and assessing and collecting the data, we might be able to pull this off, keeping within the 6 feet and not have to worry about additional contact tracing headaches. So I just wanted to let everybody know, we're certainly aware of the new guidance. We will be observing, collecting the data. And I have to give kudos to the staff, the teachers coming with wonderful ideas. I can move my classroom here. And you know, it's those little things that have made such a difference. The custodians moving, you know, something out of a room and putting one or two extra desks in there. I think we're going to be fine. So that is very good news for Babylon. But I think, you know, to really understand the guidance, you have to see it, and we will get it out to everybody. But we are going full speed ahead with the welcoming of grades 9, 10, and 11 back to full day in-person instruction as of Monday. Okay?
Any other business? Excellent. Representatives from organizations? Okay, questions or comments from visitors, please use the raise hand feature. Mr. Wieland?
Hi, how you doing, all right?
Good, thank you.
Good. Mr. Daly, I want to wish you a long and healthy retirement. Congratulations and thank you for your service to the school district. We all appreciate it.
Thank you.
I had a quick question. In regards to the kids coming back, is there going to be any change in the current classes that are back to school in regards to having into spillover rooms? My question is, now that we're bringing more kids back, are kids that currently not having to go to any spillover rooms going to have to go now because they're bringing new grades back?
I do not believe so. I think the team has been very methodical in planning for the full return of everyone.
Okay. What's that? I'm sorry.
Nope, we hear you. We
lost you for a second.
Oh, okay. My next question is, and you just went over the guidelines, and I saw that. From what I look at, I don't see the Suffolk County as a high-risk transmission area at this time. Is there something that I'm missing in regards to where the high-risk must maintain in cohorts? Because the guidelines that I've looked at, Suffolk County doesn't look like it's in a high-risk transmission area right now.
Yeah, it is right now at 4.9, and our attorney also told us that this evening. So we have to, you know, everyone in the county is waiting for those numbers to continue dropping, which they look like they are. You know, each week it gets better and better.
Right, but I'm saying that 4.9 isn't considered a high risk transmission area, which would require cohorting. So that's my question. Where are you getting that we're in a high risk area from?
Our attorneys.
The attorneys, okay. And where are they, do we know where they're getting that information from, or?
They're looking at the state DOH, I guess. We can get back to you on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, the CDC guidelines are pretty, they're pretty specific in regards to what's considered a high risk, medium, you know, moderate risk and low risk. So that's why, you know, I looked at them pretty in depth, and I don't see, I'm pretty sure Suffolk County is not in the CDC guidelines considered high risk.
Mr. Whelan, what we'll do is Mrs. Rousey will ask the district lawyer where he got that information and get back to you with the particular website and or phone number where he got that information from.
Okay, great. And then would Mrs. Rousey email me, or should I email her just to get that information?
She'll get back to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Whelan. Mrs. Campagna?
I have a question regarding, I believe one of the highlights from the guidance addressed that barriers are no longer recommended. So I know Pete didn't just ask about that because I know he had previously asked about the barriers at the high school being used. So will the barriers in the K-6 be removed, or do we plan on leaving them in until the end of the year?
We're actually talking about that right now. They do not have to be there, but they might.
You need to shut your door.
We don't know if they will continue to help any kind of spread. So I think to answer that question, that's a question a lot of districts have right now. Should we get rid of them? We're waiting for legal guidance to come out on that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mrs. Otomo.
Hello.
Hello.
I just want to say, Dr. Daly, as K-6 PTA president, that we really appreciate all the hard work you did over the years, and we wish you the best in your retirement. It's quite surprising, you know, but we do wish you the best.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure working with you.
And the same. My question has to do with sixth grade year-end events and seventh grade orientation. I was just wondering if maybe Mr. Murphy's already working on what they're planning to do as far as an orientation for sixth graders going up to seventh grade and sixth grade, you know, possible like year-end events.
That's a great question, Ms. Otomo, thanks for asking it. We were actually talking about this today. We are going to try our best to plan in-person orientations,
okay,
while keeping safety and health procedures, you know, a highlight. But that is definitely a focus with the team as we move into the spring.
Okay, great.
Thanks for the question.
Thank you.
Mrs. Battieri.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Dr. Daly, congratulations on your retirement. Thank you so much for your service to this district, the children, and the administration. Everyone will miss you dearly. So thank you so very much. My question tonight is, can you give us a little bit of information on the percentage of junior and senior high students that have returned to school full time versus remaining hybrid and or virtual?
Yeah, it's very high, actually, Teresa, those who came back full time. It's a different percentage in each grade, and I don't have the actual percentages with me, but I can share those with you tomorrow. But I would like to say it's up around 90% back full time in general.
That's fantastic. You know, the reason why I ask is as we're preparing for September and the new school year with sixth graders coming into the building, I'm curious to know how, in the event that if all the students opt into attending full day, and even if we even have a hybrid and or virtual option, I presume that we will we be able to accommodate all of the students if that number increases to, let's say, 95 to 98%?
If everything continues on this trajectory and Suffolk County continues to go down and people get vaccinated, I'll go out there and say I anticipate almost a normal opening. We might have masks on, who knows? I don't know, but we're hoping that, you know, all students are back with us in the fall.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mrs. Berry?
Hello. I'm just wondering when the board meetings are going to be in person again.
We haven't had that discussion yet. We know that the executive order was extended to what was the date? April 16th. So as soon as we get to that next work study meeting, we'll have that discussion.
Is there a reason why it's still virtual and the children will be back in school?
Because we don't,
That is the decision that this district has made at this time based on guidance. As Ms. O'Brien said, that goes through April 16th. We don't know what the governor will turn down. I think the state's obligation is to continue with all these, health and safety measures. But I don't see this continuing much longer. I might be wrong, but right now it is through April 16th.
And we've also been following the leadership of our local and town governments who are still holding meetings this way as well.
I didn't get that. I didn't understand what you just said.
I said we are also following in the footsteps of our local and town governments who are still holding their meetings this way.
Okay, well, because it is just a governor's allowing you to be virtual, not suggesting that you're virtual, correct?
What I'm curious, what is not happening under this format that you would like to see? It's Dr. Daly. What would you like to see?
Dr. Daly,
do you just have to find something every board meeting to have an issue with?
Have I even spoken up at a board meeting in a very long time?
Oh, it's been pleasant, actually.
Wow, Dr. Daly, your unprofessionalism is coming through. You have a wonderful retirement. Have a wonderful retirement on that note.
Thank you. Future board meetings. The next work study meeting will be April 26th at 7:30. The next special meeting will be Tuesday, April 27th at 4 p.m., where we will question Suffolk Voters vote and trustee election.
Right. And we will need at least four trustees.
April
27th. Okay. That's when we vote for the BOCES budget and their board trustees.
Okay. So can you please just check and see who can come on that way? Great.
What time?
Four. We got that. Great. May I have a motion to adjourn? Mrs. DeLorbo, seconded by Mrs. Donaldson. All in favor? Thank you. That's a 7-0. Have a good night.